Welcome back to the My White Belt Show. I am your host, Jim Trick. And last week's episode was different. Last week, if you tuned into last week's episode, I shared a rebroadcast of an interview that I had given just after I got my blue belt. And it wasn't a jiu-jitsu, focused interview. But jiu-jitsu came up in it. And, you know, it's really funny because with the My White Belt thing, like, obviously I'm here doing a podcast, and so you're going to get to know who I am. But I've really tried to work hard with the whole My White Belt platform, certainly not to be invisible, but to really make jiu-jitsu the focus, front and center. And last week's episode, I was a little bit worried that it was going to come across as a little self-indulgent or a little, not arrogant, but just kind of a little showboaty, like, look at me, look at me. And the response that I've gotten from that episode in terms of direct messages with people not only thanking me for sharing my story, but taking the time to reach out to tell me, you reaching out to tell me your story. And I feel a little bit like we turned a corner last week. And this 2022 has been this crazy year for My White Belt. You know, thanks to you and coming in and being interested in the subject of what's it like to actually get off the couch and get on the mat and train jiu-jitsu, and what are the mindsets and tactics and strategies and so on that we need if we're gonna do this. But I felt like last week we turned a corner into this really surprisingly deep place. And I forget who said it. Like, maybe it might have been Henry David Thoreau, or maybe it was like Ralph Waldo Emerson, one of those guys who we hear their names, but who the hell are those guys? One of those guys said, everyone is fighting a battle of which you know nothing. Everybody is fighting a battle of which everyone is fighting a battle of which you know nothing. And so what we're left with is the truth that most of us make up a story about the people we come in contact with. And, you know, and I'm not talking about like a harsh, mean judgment. I'm just saying that, you know, maybe you look at a guy in a nice car with a beautiful wife and, you know, well-dressed and fit, and you just think, oh man, that guy, it must be nice to have that guy's life. And we make up a story about what that person's life is like. Or maybe we look at our own story of whatever we've been through, whatever we've seen. Maybe it's our bad decisions. Maybe it's the thing that, you know, that happened to us when we were kids. And I talked a lot about that, my own childhood in that last episode. You know, at this stage in my life, if somebody meets me and they don't know me and they don't know my story, I don't think that they look at me and think, that looks like a guy that used to be morbidly obese. You know, that doesn't look like a guy who used to get, you know, battered and beaten as a kid. I don't think they think that. I don't really know what they think, but they probably don't think that. And so I guess the reason that I'm bringing this up is thanks for the encouragement. Thanks for encouraging me to go to that place, even though that conversation was not like as jiu-jitsu focused as we typically are, we got to go to a place that had an impact and was important. And for me, that's like such a huge part of my redemption in life, is being able to use my story and use my experience. First of all, it takes something that was really hard and makes it meaningful and makes it at least feel like it was worthwhile. And truthfully, when I look over my life, I really wouldn't change anything, especially if I think about, like, you know, every single decision that you and I have made in our lives have brought us to this actual moment. This moment right now, whether you're sitting at your desk or whether you're driving in your car, whatever you're doing right now, where that has given us this moment, every single choice we've made has brought us to this moment. And in this moment, you have chosen to listen to a podcast about something that's good for you, that you're either interested in practicing or that you're practicing. More than likely, you are training jiu-jitsu and it's having a positive impact on your life, and you're taking time off the mat to listen to a podcast that will hopefully not only make your jiu-jitsu better, but also, like all of jiu-jitsu, will make your life better. And I guess I just really want to double down on the fact that whether it's a person at work or a person at your academy, every single person, every human that you will ever come in contact with has a battle that they are fighting. They have something that they have either fought or are fighting, and we are united as human beings in that. There's a pretty high probability that the story that you make up about a person you don't know, is a pretty high probability that you're wrong about it. Especially if the story that you've made up is, oh, I bet that person has an easy life. I don't really met anybody yet who's had an easy life. So last week's episode, I feel like we turned a corner. No, we're not going to spend all of our time, like, you know, my white belt is not a therapy. It's not, this is not group therapy, but in a way, if group therapy was like jiu-jitsu, I bet a lot more people would go to jiu-jitsu. I say this if the churches that I have been a part of throughout my life functioned the way my jiu-jitsu academy functions, there would be standing room only, because there's something about this space in which we meet that, no, it's not therapy. And let's just be clear. If you need to go to therapy, go to therapy. And I'm all about you going to therapy if you need therapy. So I'm sort of speaking more metaphorically and tongue in cheek. But wow, isn't this great group therapy? And even just to the point where I just had lunch with one of our guys, and we're just talking about how lucky we are to have the jiu-jitsu crew we have, and then I got back here to the studio and my friend was upstairs, and he and I just sat together again for a couple of minutes, just talking about jiu-jitsu and our lives and how much we love it and how great it is. And he randomly, out of the blue, and he's not even on Instagram. He's my good friend. I don't think he's ever listened to an episode of My White Belt, but he said, hey, I just saw this and I thought you would like it. And it's just a little simple meme that popped up on one of his feeds. And it said, I pray my friends get through the battles they don't talk about. I pray my friends get through the battles they don't talk about. And this is just an interesting action item for you. And here's a challenge. And take the word pray out of it. If you don't like that word, listen, with anything that you hear on this podcast, take what is useful and leave the rest. I'm not here to preach to anybody. But this little meme says, so maybe think about the people that you train with, and maybe it's the person that you're really drawn to, or maybe it's the person that you just, for some reason, they rub you the wrong way and you don't connect with them. And you might just say to yourself, I hope that guy gets through the battles he's not talking about. And then in your academy and in your family and in your work, just to begin to be a person who is a little bit more in service of part of your academy's vibe is your responsibility. The whole thing isn't your responsibility, but part of it is. And I've said that before. And this is kind of like, I'm sort of rambling and going on and on a bit, but I just want a couple things to happen. I want us to be people who are not, like I said, not constantly in group therapy, but just being a little more honest about our life and our experience so that the people around us know they're not alone, and stronger bonds, better friendships, deeper relationships, they're only going to make your academy better. They're going to make everybody better. I think that, you know, selfishly from a jiu-jitsu standpoint, when you're rolling with people who are invested in you, they're going to roll and train in a way that is actually going to make you better. And you are going to roll and train in a way that's going to make them better. So, man, this is like a really long ramble to say thanks for all the feedback last week. Tell your story and make room for other people to tell you their stories and work really hard. And let's just take a second I just want to talk about Origin, because I didn't talk about them last week, but Origin makes gis in Maine, right here in the United States. But they don't only make gis, they make jeans, and they make boots, and they make hoodies, and they make shirts. They make all this gear for people like you and people like me who, I don't know about you, but I love a new gi. They make awesome rash guards. Their gear is just absolutely top, top, top quality. And it's not expensive it's definitely not expensive for what it is, and for the time, heart, and quality that is put into it. And you hear me say this most weeks where it's just like, okay, there are $40 gis out there. They're made in deplorable conditions by people who I don't think are probably psyched to be making gis. And I love the idea that my gis are made, that I could literally drive from where I live. I could drive three and a half hours and I could be at the Origin factory store. And I've actually gone up there and it's really cool. So all this to say that if you want a new gi or a pair of jeans or a pair of boots, Christmas is coming, right? When your wife or your husband or your boyfriend or your girlfriend says, what do you want for Christmas? Tell them that you want a new gi or a pair of jeans or boots from Origin, and tell them to use the discount code TRICK10. That's TRICK and the number 10 to save money on your order and support my white belt. And they also have, you know, a subsidiary company, Jocko Fuel, which is, listen, get a big rack of Jocko Fuel and share it with people and try it yourself. His Go drinks are delicious. They are all energy with zero crash. There's a whole bunch of nutritional supplements, Mulk, protein party. Welcome to a protein party. Protein powder. It's just, their whole thing is top quality. And if you're training jiu-jitsu, both Origin and Jocko Fuel more than likely support a worldview and ideology that lines up with where you are coming from. They do for me. And listen, if you are not in, if you're not in the US, you do not have to be American to appreciate American-made quality. American-made quality is available any but for anybody in the world that appreciates quality products made by happy, well-treated craftsmen. All right. So that was a long intro. Let's get into the My White Belt Hotline.
Hey, Jim. My name is Lance. I am a one-stripe white belt. I began practicing the day before my 35th birthday. That was about a month and a half ago. Just wanted to say thank you for the content and all the hard work you put into this. It's a really valuable resource. I appreciate it very much. So my question is with regards to rolling, specifically when I roll with my professor. So yesterday I was rolling with a couple of purple belts, and they both took it pretty easy on me, gave me opportunities, let me learn from my mistakes. That's pretty cool, and I've noticed that that's very typical of upper belts. Then yesterday I started rolling with my professor, and for context, we're both bigger, stronger guys. We both work in a law enforcement related field, so I don't think he's worried about me being too delicate or fragile. And yesterday he just absolutely smashed me, didn't give me any opportunities that I was able to recognize or fight through, even when I was using a lot of strength, just absolutely crushed me. And I felt like I didn't really show him anything that I've learned, anything that he's taken the time to teach me. And I felt like I kind of let him down a little bit because I just got my ass kicked for a 7-minute round. And really the only good takeaway was I survived 7 minutes and I walked off the mat. So my question to you is, you know, when you're in those situations, you know, what should I be trying to show my professor? What is he looking for from me? And what can I do to just show him that, you know, I'm on the right track and I'm learning. Thanks.
Hey, Lance, thanks for that awesome question. So let's just, before we get into the meat of your question, let me just assure you that your professor is in no way, shape, or form disappointed in you. And your professor does not feel let down by you. Any jiu-jitsu black belt worth their salt, if you are showing up clean, if you're attentive, if you're focused, if you're working hard, if you're giving it your all, if you have a great attitude, if you're not a wild man spazzing and cranking subs, if you're not a crybabying about every little ding and boo-boo that you get, if you're showing up and you're working hard and you have a great attitude, your professor is pleased with you. They are thrilled to have you on the mat. They're glad you're training. Now, I am not a black belt, and so I can only speculate as to what I think is happening. And let me be real clear that it happens to me too. So we have, you hear me talk about First Colony all the time, and I talk about Liam, and I talk about our professors, and I talk about our crew. And there are sometimes, here's what I think is happening more often than not. Most of the time when I roll with Liam, I feel like it's kind of a question and answer that they're setting up for me. They are creating scenarios that I am working to respond to. And sometimes it's a dilemma. Sometimes it's a trilemma. Sometimes it feels like there's no safe way to go. And the whole role is me trying to thoughtfully move in a way that applies technique. And, you know, I would say probably 70% of the time, it's what you described. I am certainly not going 1,000 with really anybody. I'm not going 1,000. I'm not doing anything that's going to be reckless that could, you know, especially where we do a lot of leg locks. I'm not going to ever crank a sub on my professor. You know, it would be a fool's game. What I am going to do is I'm going to try to respond in what I think is most in line with how I have been trained to respond. And the typical, like I said, is that there's room made for that. And sometimes there's no room at all. And sometimes it is a 5-minute roll where I tap over and over and over and over again. And so my speculation around that is, I think that our professors have a responsibility to teach us and to teach us comprehensively. And the spectrum would be roles where you have the opportunity to respond and roles where the entire time you feel like you're drowning. The roles in which you feel like you're drowning are going to make you tough. They're going to make you strong. You're going to burn calories. You are going to be humbled. If you are like most of us, those roles with your professor where you just feel like you can't make anything happen, where you feel completely debilitated, like a complete failure. Like for me, every once in a while, I will have a role with Liam where after almost 5 years of training, I will just sit there. I will not be a crybaby. We'll slap and bump and I'll say thank you for that. And I will just walk away going, what the hell was that? I could not make anything happen. And I think listen, if you're listening to this and you are a black belt professor, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. And if you think I'm getting this wrong, please direct message me. And I'd be so curious to know your thoughts. But it seems like when I roll with my professor, most of the time, it feels like a Q&A, like an exchange, like we're creating flows and we're working through stuff and he's setting up scenarios for me to respond to. And then other times, I'm just getting a role that is going to make me tough, that's going to make me burn calories, that I'm going to come up at the end of it and I'm going to be even more compelled by the power of jiu-jitsu. You know, this morning I rolled with Liam and, you know, there were moments where, and I probably have, you know, 6 inches of height on him and probably 80 pounds. I weigh probably 80 pounds more than he does. And there were these moments where, you know, whether he's sweeping me or he's just repositioning me, like literally taking his foot, getting a hook under my leg, lifting me, and then getting into ashi or whatever position he's getting into to work, where there feels like there is just no place to go. That role, Lance, that role for you is a gift. That role is not because after a month of training jiu-jitsu, your black belt professor thinks that you're going to be able to get anywhere or do anything. Everyone but you knows that you're not going to get anywhere and you're not going to do anything. The only damage that you're going to do is if you do some really weird, wackadoodle, dangerous, irresponsible crank or some weird thing that you might do. But no one expects you to know anything. That guy is thrilled that you're showing up and that you're training hard, and he wants you to experience firsthand the power of jiu-jitsu. And that happens with me and Liam or Professor Jeff G or, just Professor Zach, Professor Phil, Professor Lewis. I don't want to forget anybody, but it's just the list of people that are there rolling in service of us. So-called the occasional easy roll is a gift. Instructional roles are a gift. And tough roles where you might tap 20 times in a 5-minute roll, those are all there as a gift from your coach to make you better. Here, my friend, is what you don't do. You do not, under any circumstance, fish for compliments. You do not go to your professor and, you don't cry baby after a roll, but here's what you can do. It's okay. It's okay for you to say, and I say this more often than not after a roll with a black belt. I will say, hey, you know, were there any glaring mistakes in that? And they'll either say yes or no. And, and obviously they're moving on to roll with the next person, but you know, that's a fine question to ask. But if you're having a really tough round where your professor is just putting the screws to you, that's a gift. That's a gift. That's them saying, let's get you tough. Let's get you in this. Let's let you really get a taste of what this is like. And then the next roll, maybe we'll go a little bit easier and we'll teach you something. So I hope that is helpful to you. Let's dive back in and see what else we have on the My White Belt Hotline. If you have questions for the podcast, go to mywhitebelt.com and go ahead and submit your questions, and you may be featured on the My White Belt show. Here's another question.
Hey, Jim. My name is Jake. I live in Frederick County, Maryland. I train at Clinch Academy in Frederick, Maryland. So shout out to anybody that trains at Clinch Academy that might be a listener. My current struggle, I've been training jiu-jitsu for about 4 months, and I absolutely love it. It's great for me. My current struggle is my bottom game. So I'm a larger guy. So when I'm on top, I feel obviously very comfortable because I can use my weight to my advantage and I can smother people. And I feel like I can move around pretty okay from the top. The thing is, when I'm under anybody on the bottom, I'm bridging, I'm shrimping, I'm trying to get out from under people, but it's like it's not working and they completely smash me. So that's a little bit discouraging. Even if I feel like I'm doing the techniques correctly, I'm still not getting anywhere. So I was wondering if you had any motivation or any tips that you could give me for practicing on working on my bottom game. Love the podcast. Love everything you're doing. And would love to have you answer my question. Thanks.
Okay, brother. Thank you for that. Thank you for that question. I do appreciate it. And it's a good question. And so I'm going to give you a couple different versions of an answer. Have you guys ever met anybody who can talk more than me? Like, I could probably make my answers half as long, but I have opinions and I have thoughts. And as long as you're going to listen, I'm going to talk. But even as I hear myself say, I have multiple answers to your one question, and we're going to look at it from a bunch of different perspectives. Like, that's what you're getting. So that's what I have. That's what you're getting. So the first thing that I would say is about, you know, you talked about not being able to make the techniques that you've been taught work, particularly from bottom position. And here's what I have found. I have found that a lot of the techniques that I was taught during my early days of jiu-jitsu that I would try to make work, but they wouldn't work, and I would be really frustrated. That season of your life is like having a piano or a guitar that is out of tune. Jiu-jitsu is such a game of inches and angles and wedges, as John Danaher would say, open and closed wedges. Strategy, that basically the techniques that you have been handed as a beginner white belt are great techniques, but those techniques are like, for those of you who play, a lot of you play guitar, most of you have probably heard of like a Gibson Les Paul or a Fender Stratocaster. You know, those are sort of like our classic great electric guitars. But I could take the most beautiful, vintage, gorgeous, pre-CBS Fender Strat with like a beautiful Vox tube amplifier, and I could hand it to you after a couple of months of lessons and say, all right, this guitar is a $20,000 electric guitar. Let's plug this baby in and hand it to you. And you would play it and it would sound like garbage. And it's not the guitar's fault. The guitar is great. The guitar is maybe the best guitar you're ever going to play. But it's out of tune. And you don't know how to tune it yet. And it's, you know, And your fingers are like muffling the wrong strings as you go to play those chords. And so this is early days of jiu-jitsu for you, me, and almost everybody, where you're a big guy, you're comfortable on top, but man, when it comes to the bottom, and your professor is teaching you escapes, like maybe they are teaching you a trap and roll if somebody has you mounted, or maybe they're teaching you how to try to regain your closed guard while you are under somebody's side control. So my first piece of advice for you, Jake, I think your name is Jake, is to know that the instrument that you have been given by your professor is a beautiful, valuable instrument. That technique that you have been given, if your professor has given you that technique, they are giving you that technique because they believe and are experienced to know that that technique is going to work for you. Now, it's a matter of really recognizing, really throwing yourself into becoming an expert on that technique. So in this case, two places that you are likely to be in that you do not want to be in. And, you know, if you listen to the podcast, you've heard me ask other black belts, you've heard me ask them, what position do you not want to be in? all these years later, what position do you not want to be in? And they almost always will say mount. They don't want to be mounted by somebody. When you are mounted by a good player, or when you are in a tight side control, it is tough. It's just tough. And the things that you, now I'm gonna just get a little bit technical here. I was working with somebody this morning. I was working with Maddie this morning. Maddie is the guy who he was listening to the podcast, and I was on an airplane like 2 or 3 months ago, maybe 3 or 4 months ago now. And a guy in the chair behind me leaned over and said, "My wipeout?" And I was like, "Yeah, who are you?" And he's like, "My name is Matt. I follow you on Instagram, and I'm moving one town over for you, and I want to come train." And so now Maddie has become like an awesome training partner. And today, this morning, we were working his bottom game. And so now, you know, I'm much bigger and heavier than Maddie is, but he's also super strong and he's fit. And so we were working on this exact same thing. So let's just talk for a second about you being stuck in a heavy, uncomfortable side control. Your ability, especially this early into your game, it is imperative that you immediately begin to work on having strong, strategic frames. Let's say that somebody is putting you in their side control. You are on the bottom and their head is to your left. Your left forearm is creating a frame under their carotid artery, and your right arm is creating a frame under their belt line. And you're probably not even putting your right elbow to the mat. It's probably literally just your forearm. And what's happening with strong, effective frames from bottom side control, you are creating space. When they are backing off, you have room to move. When they're driving in hard to you, your frames will make it unbearable. They are creating discomfort for themselves. All of a sudden, this chest-on-chest pressure, this crossface from their shoulder, this weight that they have been punishing you with, is now alleviated by having frames that allow you space to move. And I'm not going to get into all of the ABCs of, you know, technique of escaping side control on a podcast. I know there are podcasts that do that. I don't think that's my best area to work in. But for this question, I think that just reminding you of the importance of having really strong strategic frames. So that's number one from side control. Number two is when you are mounted, you're brand new, you have to at all costs know that there's no scenario in which extending your hands over your head is going to be good for you if somebody has you mounted. It is, you are just basically opening yourself up for an armbar. So one thing to think about, and again, I'm not going to get too deep into these details, but if you are mounted by somebody, imagine if you can get a frame, both hands on one of their hips. So your elbows are in tight and your hands are low on the person's hips. Their goal is to get a high mount. Anything that they're going to try to do to you if they have you mounted, is going to go better for them if they are on your chest. If they are mounted on your chest, anything that you do in terms of bridging is going to be not nearly as effective and impactful as it will be if you can frame on their hips and get their hips over your hips so that when you bridge, just imagine you're on the ground, person is on your chest, and you lift your hips. They're sitting on your chest. Lifting your hips is going to do little, but if you can frame on their hips and if you can push them down, get them over your hips, then when you go to bridge, now you're potentially getting their hands on the mat. Now you're making room to sneak a knee in. But that's a long answer to the question. So just to repeat my answer, because that's how I am. You have a beautiful instrument in all of these classic techniques that are taught to you in your early days. And it's just a matter of the more you do them, the more they become tuned and the more skilled you get at playing them. There's no substitution for time. So bottom side control, really think about strategic framing. Talk to your professor about it. And when you are in bottom mount, really think about framing on the person's hips, making sure that their hips are over your hips so that when you do go to bridge, you're getting the most bang for your buck. And I hope that advice helps you. You know, don't be the big floppy guy that just lays heavy on people. And when you are on your back, you know, now let's, you know, and we could spend forever. We could talk about every position from on your back in closed guard, on your back in half guard, on your back in quarter guard. There's just, you know, there's a lot here, but I think that's enough. That's probably enough for you to work on. Reach out and let me know how that goes. Well, listen, I know that we are moving into the holiday season. And I hope that over the course of the next month and here in New England, as we move into winter, I really hope that you will stay committed through this holiday season, that you'll be eating right and obviously celebrate and have a great time with your friends and family. But just try to, you know, maintain commitment to training. If you haven't already, go to My White Belt and sign up for My White Belt Wednesday. It's our new newsletter episodes, or rather editions, installments. Anyhow, sign up for My White Belt Wednesday. One of the things that I'm going to be able to do in the newsletter is get more detailed with some of the technique stuff that comes up in questions all the time, and the opportunity to expose you to some of the world's greatest, like just the world's greatest teachers and coaches and professors. So I've got some stuff up my sleeve. Please sign up for My White Belt Wednesday, and know that I've been talking about it for a while and I haven't published the first one yet. And that's because I want it to be the kind of thing that when it shows up in your inbox, you're not like, oof, I'm not going to open that thing. Like, I can't tell you how often I sign up for a newsletter and I open it one time, it's super lame, and then I just never bother opening it again, and then I just unsubscribe. So I want to make something that's useful for you. And so far, I know every week I say it's happening this week, but I think that this could be the week. Maybe I just shouldn't promise. Go sign up for it. It's free. And if you don't like it, you can unsubscribe. Pick up a t-shirt. There are My White Belt t-shirts, 3 different designs at mywhitebelt.com. Again, thanks for listening. I'm Jim Trick. This is My White Belt. Train hard and train smart.